This is Lele Pons from Suite 305 with Lele Pons. Game day at my house, it's chaos, but like in a fun way. The TV's ready, the remotes are ready, the kids' toys are going off, and somehow everybody needs batteries at the exact same time. That's why I keep Duracell stocked. And Duracell just released limited edition Duracell and Messi battery packs. The design is inspired by Messi's iconic left leg tattoo. So every battery feels like it comes with an extra kick. From the TV remote to automatic corkscrew, Duracell keeps us game day ready. Duracell double and triple A batteries are the only ones built different with power boost ingredients for long-lasting performance you can trust. Find the limited edition Duracell and Messi batteries in stores at Lowe's and Walmart or on Amazon.
Big transfer news today.
Who's moving?
Me. To the couch with Domino's best deal ever since they just added stuffed crust.
Any pizza, any toppings, now with stuffed crust for $9.99.
It's a long-term contract with no release clause.
Only $9.99? Yeah, that sounds like the move. I'm heading straight to
Domino's.
Price is higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6/15 through 7/26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York-style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And it's spring. You can tell because I'm not wearing my spring and summer shirt.
Which is the same brand.
It's no, the same different brand.
It's a different brand from the winter shirt.
Totally different brand. So, I mean, super different.
This is one of the things you and I have in common where we basically find a thing that we like and we just buy seven of them in different colors. Although in your case, you do it the same color. Like people think you have one shirt, but you actually have the same shirt seven times. Like
no,
Steve Jobs.
I have it in different colors. Now, what I do is actually with the summer shirt, they're all different colors. Mm. Yeah. For the winter shirt, winter and fall shirt, which is a long sleeve tee, I have like eight of those in like three different colors. And so there, you know, I have like two or three of each color.
Do you know what I miss? I miss the days of the pandemic.
The tank
when
top.
When you and I did these before in our PJs, before we were on video, and I could just see so much of your flesh. You just
it was everywhere.
Tank tops.
Basically doing them shirtless. I was like the Big Lebowski. It was, those were the day we get away with a lot before video. I could be wearing my glasses instead of contacts. It was, it's good times. Good times. You know what else is good times, Sarah?
Tell me.
I woke up early this morning and I pumped out an absolutely kick-ass newsletter.
Hmm.
It's going to be read by nobody, but I am very, very pleased with it.
And I'm sure I will read it a week from now.
It is it's a theory. I came up with a theory. And
it's
a theory about, you know how they've talked about like the Trump madman theory. This is like a big thing that defenders do.
Voters in the focus group talk about
makes
it all the time.
The foreign leaders just give him whatever he wants because he's deranged.
And he's unpredictable and you don't know what he's going to do. And that keeps them off balance. Yes.
So that has been vitiated by events, especially the Iran war. But what if the Trump madman theory is true about the stock market? And so this is what my piece is today. In a world in which Trump creates total chaos, and we did like chaos is now the baseline assumption.
Yeah.
Markets, when chaos is normal, markets have to price chaos in as normal. And so a chaotic event like the biggest oil energy spike in history becomes something that the markets go, yeah, like they don't freak out about it. And then anytime you get a single hint of normality, the normality are the weird events and the markets react to those by jumping up. And so what I tried to tease out is, we had this week simultaneously warnings from people saying, hey, the last ships to have left the Strait of Hormuz pre-war, they are about to dock and discharge their cargoes of oil. And after that, we've got this huge gap in the supply of petroleum. That's going to cause havoc. Oh, also the S&P 500 just hit a record high. So you look at these two things, you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And so anyway, the piece itself is long. It's fantastic. It may not be right. I'm not saying it's fantastic because it's it's correct, but it's an interesting way of thinking about this, and I'm hopeful that it will spark some good discussion amongst readers about what some alternate theories are, and because something's going on.
Well, right? let me ask you
this. It's weird for the stock market to be going up like this.
It is.
While you're in the midst of something which 10 years ago, in the before times, I think would have created a great deal of uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking at it thinking that the stock market has just become either untethered to reality, because reality is no fun, or everything I've read is like, well, in the short term, it might not be great, but they're just betting on the long term, that cooler heads prevail and that they figure it out. And to me, I don't know if it's that, I don't know if it's chaos or just they price in the tacoing. They're like, Trump will not, that he has shown a desire to get out of all of these predicaments like tariffs or whatever by like adjusting things when they're not going his way. And so they just assume that's going to happen.
But that's part of it, but that's all chaos, right? I mean, even the tacoing is chaos because you're never sure, well, when is it going to taco?
Is it chaos or is it a predictable flip-flopping?
So it's not really predictable. I pulled a chart from Bloomberg where they looked at the tariffs. And they kept track of all of the tariff threats, and they broke them down by tariff that has been implemented and is still there, tariffs that were implemented and repealed, tariffs which were withdrawn before they were implemented, and tariffs which have been threatened but not implemented but not repealed. And the bars are all like, great. Like, there's no way of knowing what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? It isn't like they all are not on or all were repealed. Anyway, that's a longer story. We could talk about that. But I say this because I woke up this morning and I went to Truth Social, as I always do. That's not true. I don't actually do that. And the first thing I saw was a truth about Tucker and Candace and Alex Jones. Tucker is a low IQ person, always easy to beat, and highly overrated. So are Megyn Kelly, Candace, really dumb and mentally ill, and bankrupt Alex Jones, who is completely fried. Okay? I don't quite understand where that came from. He was just reacting to a...
Oh, no, he's mad at Alex Jones, Harry and Anton. Alex Jones is mad at him. Alex Jones has been ranting about how Trump should be kissing his ass. Like, there's a very stupid but very real podcast war now between Trump and some of the top people who abandoned him over the Iran war.
Well, it's interesting. But then 45 minutes before we started to tape, we got Iran has just announced that the Strait of Iran is fully open and ready for full passage. Thank you, is all caps. Followed 20 minutes later by... all caps. The Strait of Hormuz is completely open and ready for business and full passage, but the naval blockade will remain in full force and effect as it pertains to Iran only until such time as our transaction with Iran is 100% complete. This process should go very quickly in that most of the points are already negotiated. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump.
I saw this tweet in Slack and I just responded and said, what? What?
Great. I guess it's all worked out.
Yeah, but hold
nothing
on.
Nothing to worry about.
Well, let's just take it. Let's take it line by line for just one quick second. And we don't even have to spend that much time on this. But so it's open, but not to Iran. But it's called the Strait of Iran now. But
is it?
Well, remember in the first tweet, you see, he said the Strait of Iran is open. And I was like, is this a Gulf of America type thing? Where part of the conditions is now that we call it the Strait of Iran, or is Trump just forgetting what things are called?
Yeah, he did. That's right. The Strait of Iran is fully open.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
my brain just went right over that.
But so like, okay, so our Navy is still blockading it against Iran?
Only blockading ports, Iranian ports, not the waterway itself. And this is a semi-important distinction. We talked about this with Hertling yesterday. Trump had originally said, we are blockading the Strait of Hormuz. Now, this would have been an illegal action because the Strait of Hormuz is a waterway governed by international law, which assures freedom of passage. For Trump to say, we are going to blockade it, it is very possible that the U.S. military would have refused to carry out that order because that would be an illegal order. So, like 4 days later, CENTCOM comes out and clarifies, no. The president, what he meant was that we are blockading Iranian ports along the strait because that's a thing you can do as an act of war that does not violate international law.
Yeah.
Of course, it violates American law because we haven't declared war. And a blockade is, again, just as a... If we're going to talk about the definitions of words and whether or not they have legal meanings, blockade has a legal meaning in America as an act of war, not an act of a military conflict or a military operation. And so once you... Like, you can send troops into a country, you can drop bombs on a country, and you can play with the words and say, well, this is a military action and not an act of war. You can't do that with a blockade. Whatever.
Okay. Well, good, I guess. We'll see where it goes since they're still negotiating these points that we don't know. Clearly, they are not, they have not
All's
found...
Well, that ends well.
Well, they haven't found it. The whole thing of nuclear weapons has still not been resolved. And until it is, we're just hanging out in a middle space. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Great. It's good news. It's all good news.
I want to talk about the election. Come on.
Okay. So in New Jersey, my district, actually, New Jersey 11.
Is that true? Did you vote?
Yeah. I didn't. I'm sorry. It's been a week. Actually, okay. I have stuff to talk to you about offline.
Okay.
Oof. So in New Jersey 11, we had an election yesterday. I want to just pull up the results. We had Joe Hathaway, a rock-jawed, good Republican, not very Trumpy, or at least presented himself as not very Trumpy, running against Ana Lilia Mejia, a Hispanic gal from the precincts of Bernie Sanders land. Very, very progressive. And she crushed him.
She crushed him. And this is Mikey Sherrill's old seat, her vacated seat at a special election. Yeah.
So this is what I want to bring home to people. This is New Jersey 11. So in 2024, Mikey Sherrill, who was the incumbent, ran against a tomato can of a Republican named Joseph Belnome, and she won by 15 points in a race that was simply not competitive. This was, you know, barely had to spend any money. It was just, you know, boom, boom, boom. 15-point margin of victory. In an open seat in this special election with a first-time candidate in Mejia, who is, unlike Mikey Sherrill, quite progressive. You would have thought, ooh, well, maybe it's kind of risky for Democrats to run somebody like that in this seat, right? I mean, this is where I live. I'm telling you, not a bunch of commies here. She won by 19 or 20 points. So this, to me, the big story for this is it is another data point. If you are looking at what the environment is like for Republicans, that here where they spend some money, and there's no outside spend in this case. It was just pure the two campaigns going head to head against one another in a very achievable, again, it's a blue seat, but not a super blue seat. It was held by Mikey Sherrill's moderate Democrat, shifting pretty far to the left candidate wise, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. In fact, the margin is even bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if I'm just a Republican strategist doing X's and O's, I look at this and it's just one more like, holy fuck, we're going to get our teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
Yes. Would you say that's totally correct?
I think that's the top line takeaway is, and you know, I don't know if you saw this, but I did a take yesterday where I was breaking down all of the fundraising calls from the Democratic candidates like Tal Rico and Ossoff. Like, these guys are just blowing the door. Sherrod Brown, they're blowing the doors off their fundraising numbers, totally outraising their Republican counterparts. And that's not, it's not really a story about money. It's a story about energy. Right. Yeah. And part of what I was trying to, because what was so interesting to me is the infrastructure of the Democratic Party, the DNC, their Senate PACs, they're getting their butts kicked by the Republicans at the infrastructure level, which means people don't want to give to the Democratic Party qua party, but they do want to give to these individual candidates.
Sounds fine by me.
Well, that's honestly, just an interesting thing. Yeah. And you can see then this, when you see a lot of the polling where you're like, well, you know, the Democratic Party is really underwater in approval. And I have been saying that's because actual Democrats are mad at the Democratic Party. And so the party apparatus is having a hard time fundraising. But that does not mean there's not a ton of energy on the Democratic side. There is. And that's why their individual candidates are putting up these big numbers. So I think that's the top line takeaway. But I want to go a little bit deeper because something else happened.
I want to hold on. Can we, before we go deeper, I want to prompt you for something else, though.
Oh, okay.
Along this top line.
Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
At Vuse, we're vapor done right. Always simple. Always in your pocket. So you can focus on what really matters. Like getting back to your podcast. Find out more at Vuse.com. That's Vuse.com.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRBC.
So you talk in your book, How to Eat an Elephant. You talk a little bit about So the Democrats have a brand problem. Like, the independent voters don't like the Democratic Party, but there is an opportunity for Democrats to run candidates who do run against the Democratic establishment, right?
Yes.
Mamdani is one of these. AOC is one of these. Mejia was one of these. Is what you're talking about with the fundraising another sign of that, right? Like, you have Democrats who are basically soft rebooting the brand of the party by not running as like your father. I don't know, like, how this isn't your father's Democratic Party. That's like a stupid thing, but they're running not as like, hey, I'm an institutional Democrat, but like, I'm my own person. This is what I wanted to put a quarter in the machine for.
But actually, so they are running against the Democratic Party in both directions. So when I talk about the big broad tent, right, I used to talk about sort of a pro-democracy coalition that went from Liz Cheney to Liz Warren. And I think now we need to sort of update that to, we're talking about a sort of pro-democracy, but not even a, it's not even pro-democracy, like it's really a democratic coalition that runs from, you know, your Mikey Shearls, your Abigail Spanbergers, over to your Mamdani's, and like, this woman is quite progressive, and your Bernie's and your AOC's, right? In both cases, the moderates are running against, in more moderate places, in more red places, they're running against the sort of woke DEI, like, that, you know, that part's ridiculous and I'm not like that. And I'm focused on affordability. I'm focused on money. I'm focused on improving your lives, sure, right? Your material well-being on the moderate side. On the very progressive side, they are also running against the party, the establishment, the big money elites, corporations, and also they're focused on affordability and the material improvement of your lives. However, it is like the DSA socialist, all the way over to the sort of the DSA socialist side of Mamdani, to the more, let's say, free market side of
neolibs,
right? Yeah. Our friends, the more
that's good, right? Isn't it good having both of those?
It is
like,
good.
A little coexist within the party.
And that's why, not to derail us into any Hassan Piker conversation, but only to say, like, my objection to him personally and the things that he said was more from like, do you want to carry his baggage? Because the coalition does need to include basically this incredibly wide group of people. Now, my frustration is when I get frustrated because I am somebody who is like, part of building it is about it being a pro-democracy coalition. It's about, you know, saving American liberal democracy. And so when some people run against American liberal democracy in general or reject American liberal democracy or use violent rhetoric, they're just not for me, right? Like, I'm not going to support that. However, that's different from like the big, broad coalition of the range of Democrats people. But the through line is, and this is why one of the chapters is called It's the Affordability Stupid, is like talking about improving the material well-being of working class voters can unite all of the different parts of this coalition together, and that different candidates are going to work in different places, right? And so like the fight between becoming more moderate and more progressive doesn't need to happen. Doesn't need to happen. But here's the, then there's, can I go deeper now?
Please. Yeah. Okay. No, I just wanted you to hit that level for me.
Yeah. The most interesting thing to me though, is another place where Democrats are starting to reevaluate things. So in this race, cause it's an open seat. So there was a Democratic primary. AIPAC came in and spent against our friend, Tom Malinowski. Now, Tom Malinowski was a pro, was like, he was perfectly friendly to Israel. He just said, I'm not going to give Israel a blank check anymore, which by the way, I'm sorry, guys, this is where it's going. Okay. Candidates, this is where it's going with Democratic voters and where even, and a lot of independent voters,
Republican voters too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This like not a blank check. And so he was on the very moderate wing. AIPAC rolls in, spends hard against him. And as a result, now, the person who won, this woman who won, much more progressive. She is a Palestinian activist. She is super progressive. And so, like, I don't know what AIPAC was thinking, that they wanted to come in there and go against Malinowski. But it is an example. And this is part of what's interesting is that this is all over the focus groups now. You do Dem focus groups or sort of left-leaning independent focus groups. So I just did this in... did you listen to the focus group episode about the election in Chicago where Juliana Stratton, I can't remember. She was the one who ran the F Trump, like just a straight up F Trump ad.
I don't know if I did.
Okay, so I did it with Axelrod, Chicago guy, and
I must have listened to it. Yeah.
So it was before the election. It was before the and it was one of those Senate races where in the Democratic primary, whoever won the Democratic primary was going to be the senator. And there was other things about her. She got J.B. Pritzker's endorsement and a bunch of his money. But she basically catapulted over a more establishment candidate by just running an ad that said F Trump. But in that, when I was doing the focus groups in that race with Democratic voters, they all knew who was taking AIPAC money and who wasn't. And that was their litmus test. And this is, I can often distinguish between social media phenomena and real life phenomena. And this is one that is not just a social media phenomenon. Democratic voters are looking at who AIPAC is funding and they are voting against that person. But also AIPAC is spending a lot of money in these races to try to get the more pro-Israel candidate. But they got mad at Tom Malinowski, spent a bunch of money against him, and as a result, got a much less friendly candidate. And I find that interesting. And I do think in this argument around sort of the tent, the coalition, you know, this is why my argument was, don't make some streamer the litmus test. It's not about going on and talking to the streamer. It's about the Democratic Party fundamentally reevaluating their relationship with Israel, which doesn't mean necessarily hostility to Israel, right? It can just mean, like Tom was saying, we're not going to do a blank check, or you know, this, the way that both America is behaving right now and the way Israel behaving is alarming. And so in the, you know, there are things that we will do that I don't know, maybe it's like we fund the defense, we still fund defense forces, but we don't give them money to attack people. Like, we don't give them money for bombs. Like, there are a lot of ways in which people can start reevaluating this that don't have to go so far as to be like, and also I'm pro-Russia and, you know, anti-Ukraine and I love China and the Communist Party, right? Like, there is and this is, you know, it's like I always said about immigration. If sort of the, let's call them classical liberals, like the people who believe in liberal democracy, don't say that they're going to do something about the border when Americans really care about it, they're going to let the fascists do it. And it's the same thing on Israel. If sort of regular Democrats don't start reevaluating, they're going to reach for people who are much more anti-Israel. What do you think about that?
All right. Let me read to you from the Times of Israel today. Okay. This is their headline. Democrat Anna Lilia Mejia, harsh Israel critic, wins New Jersey special election to Congress. She narrowly beat a more moderate opponent, Tom Malinowski, in a February Democratic primary that saw the pro-Israel lobby AIPAC spend $2.3 million against Malinowski, who supported conditions on military aid to Israel. Mejia has been a harsher in her criticism of Israel, and unlike Malinowski, refers to the two-year war against Hamas in Gaza as a, quote, genocide. I don't want to hear a single fucking word from anybody who is AIPAC aligned about Mejia not supporting Israel. Don't want to hear a word. Because they worked to put her in that seat.
And why? I genuinely can't understand what's going on.
Because they want to be the boss of everything. Right? This is a like, hey, we get to decide. And you know what? Good luck with that. Good luck.
What an own goal.
You are. It's a real interesting thing. And I am looking at the way the Netanyahu administration treated Joe Biden and made his life very, very difficult. And really, I mean, very clearly, worked to, while Biden was president, hurt him politically so that Donald Trump could wind up as president again, when Biden had put himself all the way out on the line for Israel and had hugged Netanyahu as tight as he possibly could after October 7. I mean, the deal in international relations is that, in theory, especially when you're a supplicant nation like Israel is, you try to make sure that you have good relations with both parties in the nations that you need help from, because you never know who's going to be in. This is why Zelensky tried to placate Trump in Trump 1. So, you know, the perfect phone call where Trump is saying, I want you to pretend that you have dirt on Biden. And Zelensky is not saying no. Right. He's not saying, like, how dare you, sir, because he knows he has to maintain good relations with Trump. But he also knows that, like, well, I don't know, the Democrats might get power someday. Like, Ukraine needs to have good relations with the American, you know, political system, regardless of who is in power. I got to try to make sure that I'm, like, staying on both sides. And Bibi was like, fuck you, Democratic Party. So, you know what? Good luck. Bibi Netanyahu wanted America to have Trump because he thought it was good for Israel, which means that he took sides against American democracy.
Yeah.
And I understand that from his perspective as the head of Israel, that he thinks that that was good for them. That's fine. As a person who cares about American democracy much more than I care about Israel, I think that we should not be helping a state whose government is antagonistic towards American democracy. no animus, but good luck is what I would say. And to the APACs of the world, also good luck.
This is where the Democratic
Party should absolutely not be sticking their neck out for, again, a government in the Netanyahu government, which is anti-Democratic Party, like which worked to help Donald Trump.
And this is where, this is the only thing that really irked me.
Is that crazy? Maybe this is, no. Like, this is me ranting a little bit.
No, the only thing that irked me, which is a whole bunch of new, when I got in that argument with Tim, because I didn't like Tim downplaying the things Piker was saying for us. And that was why I went in there and like was had that conversation. And like a whole bunch of people who've never heard anything about me decided, you are a genocide lover who, you know, supports Israel. I'm like, have you ever listened to me talk? Like, I just had 2 weeks earlier done a podcast with Tim about how we needed to reevaluate the unconditional support with Israel. But that's not even the point. The point is, all I wanted is to get rid of Donald Trump, right, to help save American liberal democracy. And I couldn't be more critical, not even of Israel, specifically Netanyahu, because he did exactly what you just said. He worked against American democracy to get a criminal who, like him, a corrupt leader like him, elected again in America. And look, to do that has nothing to do with, I think Israel has every right to defend itself after October 7th. But obviously, at some point, it tipped over into a humanitarian disaster. And there's all kinds of reasons to reevaluate America's relationship with Israel, which doesn't mean being hostile to it necessarily. Like, there are a lot of ways this could go, but Democrats are going to have to be leaders on this, right? They can't be led by some of the most toxic forces. They need to decide for themselves that they're going to reevaluate this because it has been bad for American liberal democracy.
Yeah. No, I agree, actually. They got to be out in front of this.
Yeah.
And talking about it. And it should, you know, I think Tim's analogy to the way Canada has reevaluated its relationship with America is exactly right. Like, that's how we should be reevaluating our relationship with Israel.
And that doesn't have to be forever. It just has to be till everyone starts behaving normal again.
So this is great, because this brings me to the conversation I want to pick up from the very end of Focus Group yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh my God, guys,
JBL was on the Focus Group podcast yesterday. Yeah, but you were super normal for like the first 40 minutes, but like in the last 20, you started to start just like screaming at the voters. You were making great points, but you were like me. You were yelling at the camera, and you were mad, and you were swearing, which we're going to have to bleep out because the Focus Group podcast is a family show.
Nobody told me that.
Yeah, no. Let's continue that conversation though, because it was a good one because you were doing the classic JVL thing where you dropped like big enormous things to wrestle with at like the 45 minute mark.
I did that for a reason. Yeah. This is I was trying to tease people across, bring people from one show to the other. It's a smart thing that brands do. I wrote about this week. Looking,
do you want to take it
the
behind
Hungarian
the paywall, buddy?
Elections. You know what? I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
People should join.